name of Baal and all things holy, I command you now to leave.
Ah, holes. Baal sodden, mumbling, bumbling holes. He floated to the chapel, the last refuge of dead men, where the shaking old fool stood on the steps and defied him to the last.
There is no Conroyd, he said, smiling down at him. Conroyd is dead.
I don't believe you,
Holes quavered.
Return him to us, whoever you are, and get you gone from here.
Still smiling, he reached down and touched Ephraim's cheek. Withered flesh scorched and melted.
Ephraim, Ephraim, recall your scripture. You know who I am.
As the cleric fell backwards, screeching, he turned in the air and faced the vanquished mountains. Shivering with pleasure, with a ravenous hunger, he opened his mind and summoned his power, all his power, all of himself that he'd left behind, that for too long had been denied him beyond Baal's wall, summoned his glorious victory, and received nothing. The shock was so great he fell like a stone, plunged into the midst of four-legged cattle. Before they could trample him, he turned them to ashes with fire and hate, then took again to the fretful air. Horror was a living thing, beating him almost to blindness. Nothing? Nothing? How could there be nothing? He was Morg, the most powerful magician, undying. He was a mountain of power, an ocean of power, a sky everlasting of power. He opened his mind a second time, strained beyond the confines of flesh, of blood, this outgrown, borrowed body, and touched his sundered self, felt it tremble as he now trembled, yearn as he was yearning to be complete again. And then it recoiled, repulsed him. He felt revulsion, rejection, an utter repudiation of his mind and his mastery, as though he were a stranger and this not a coming home. Deep inside him, Conroyd was laughing. Morg, Morg, what did you think? That I, Conroyd Geralt, would lie down and die? How could you swallow me yet not know my flavor? You're far too late, cousin, and too long changed. Our minds are one. Our flesh is one. I am you, and you are me, and there is now no going back. The wall is fallen, and still you are trapped. Deaf and blind, Morg hung in the air. Trapped? Trapped? He opened his mouth and screamed. Forgetting he hated her, Asher grabbed Daphne's hand and ran, trusting the others to follow. As Morg dangled helpless above them, keening like a creature in torment, he headed for the nearest safe shelter, the Butcher's Guild Common House, half of its roof missing and part of one wall, but with most of its front awning still intact. They scuttled inside and collapsed to the ground, panting.
The guardhouse would be safer, said Auric. The shoulder of his tunic was wet with blood. And I've lots of weapons there.
Asher shook his head.
Truncheons and pikestaffs won't hurt that thing. Vera, what's happening?
Seated on a big chunk of brickwork, the old woman dabbed a kerchief to a bleeding arm.
Don't know, but it's useful. Everyone all right?
Everyone was. Even Darren beside her, though he looked the worse for wear, pasty-faced and breathing like a bellows. Gar, his hail-damaged cheek puffed and scabbed with blood, had an arm tight round the old man's shoulders, holding him shakily upright. Matt crouched beside them, and Daphne next, with Auric closest to the street, and trouble. Of course. He shouldn't have let them come. They couldn't help him, and all their lives were in danger. Gar let go of Darren's slumped shoulders and wriggled closer.
Asher, I have to talk to you. Privately.
Bits of broken masonry dug sharply into his knees. Ignoring the small discomfort, he didn't take his eyes from the square. From Morg.
What for? There's nowt left to say.
Gar had never known when to shut up.
Yes, there is. The killing spell.
He spared the little shit an impatient glance.
I've learned it. I know it. You did your job. Now hold your tongue, why don't you, so's I can do mine. I'm trying to think here if it's all right with you.
But you don't understand. I... Lunging sideways past all the rest of them, he shoved Gar hard and sent him toppling. The bastard's head hit the wall with a thud.
There's nowt left to say!
As Darren protested and the others fussed over Gar, Vera leaned over and touched his head. Her hood was down, her silver snake of hair rain-soaked and tumbling round her shoulders.
I'll call the circle to you now, child. Let them in. Let them help you. Don't be afraid.
He wasn't afraid. He was bloody terrified. With the wall's demise, the grinding pain in him was almost faded, but in its place something darker flowed bitter and sluggish through his veins, sticky like tar. The foulness of Morg. From the sick look on Matt's face, his friend was feeling it too, but not as keenly as he did. Or as intimately. Matt weren't the innocent mage.
He ain't. But I am.
For the very first time, he truly accepted it. Did that mean he accepted death, too? Vera's finger poked him.
Asher! What is it? What's amiss?
He waited until his heart stopped galloping, and he could trust his voice not to crack. His feet not to run him away from there without asking permission first. Nowt, I'm fine.
Then be still and silent, and I'll summon the circle.
Asher watched as she fumbled in her pocket, pulled out that blue felt bag and withdrew a shard of crystal. It shimmered in the lowering light, then was hidden between her palms. Her eyes closed, her lips moved without sound. And the crystal shard she'd buried in his flesh burst burning into life, in his mind a chorus of voices echoing.
We're here, Asher. We're with you. Use our strength when you need it. It's yours for the taking.
Fear faded, and with it some of the blackness in his blood. He felt his power stir, untainted, felt the remnants of pain ease. A comforting heat was in him now, centered above his heart, within the crystal. In the square outside their shelter, Morg's horrible screaming stopped. Asher stood. Ready or not, want this or not, his time had come.
Best finish this, I reckon.
The quality of silence behind him changed. Lost outrage, acquired sorrow. Became heavy, full of unspoken last words. He didn't want to hear them. He was doing this because they'd asked him, begged him, because no one but him could do it. Because he'd promised to help them no matter the cost, and unlike some people, he kept his word. Didn't mean he wanted a scene.
What are you doing? Don't go out there, said Daphne. Fight him from here in safety.
Helen Auric answered her.
How can he, Daphne? There are people in the way.
The square was full of Olkin and a handful of Doranan, folk who'd had nowhere to run to or thought they'd be all right. Some of them wore faces he'd known once, surely, when he'd been a different man. Dazed and stumbling, they crawled amongst the rubble and debris, the aimlessly milling livestock, the fallen bodies. Some struggled to reach Barlsman Holes, the last authority left in the city. The cleric sprawled on his Barl's chapel step, unmoving.
Asher!
Daphne cried as he took another step. He stopped, fingers tight on the ragged brickwork. "Don't look, don't look. There ain't no bloody point." He looked. He had to. All her love was in her face. Seeing it, something brittle inside him broke. All was broken. He summoned a smile for her. "It's all right, Daphne. The bastard won't touch you." There were tears in her eyes and on her cheeks. "There's something I have to tell you. I..." He went to her and dropped to one knee, let his fingers trace the gentle upswing of her eyebrow, her severely curving cheekbone, and lips. "Tell me later."
"But..."
He stood, and she fell silent. With a final smile, he turned his back on her, on all of them. Vera, Darren, Pellen, Matt, and Gar. Stepping out of their meagre shelter, he looked at the creature spinning and spinning and spinning above him, oblivious to everything save its private pain. But for how long? In his mind, the circle waited. He ran haphazard to the steps of the chapel, dodging livestock, ignoring the fallen who needed his help, even the children. Holes were stirring now, sitting up. Seeing him, the cleric gasped,
"Asher!"
He held out his hand. Above their heads, Morg dangled, moaning. "Holes?" 5 charred fingerprints marred the side of the cleric's pain-twisted face.
"You're alive?"
"No, I'm a ghost," he said, and helped Holes to his unsteady feet. Despite the dirty past they'd shared, he felt a grudge of respect. Holes could have bolted, and didn't. The barsman's pale lips tightened.
"Do you know what that is?"
he asked, pointing to Morg.
"Aye. Do you?"
"I think I might," Holes said, frowning. "Though my mind can scarce believe it."
He snorted.
"Believe it, Holes. That's Morg."
The last hint of colour drained from the cleric's face, leaving the fingerprints livid, and he kissed his holy ring with fervour.
"Baal, save us."
"If you say so."
Asher turned and looked at the dazed people in the square. "These folk can't stay out here. Can you get them back in the chapel?"
"Yes, yes, of course. But why? What are you going to do?"
He jerked his head upwards. "Kill that," Holes choked.
"How?"
"How do you reckon?" he snapped, and conjured flame. Not tame and gentle glimlight, but the cruel, greedy heat of warfare, one of the many tricks to be found in Baal's diary, which he could so easily have lived without.
"What is this blasphemy?"
Holes demanded, staring at the fire leaping from Olkin fingers.
"That's no magic known to me. How do you come by it? Who taught it to you? Morg?"
He grinned, feeling vicious.
"No, Holes. Baal."
Holes came close to falling headfirst down the steps.
"No, no, that's not possible."
With a flick of his wrist, he extinguished the flame. "We can argue what is and ain't possible when this is over, provided we're both still standing." Shaken, Holes looked again at Morg.
"You can't kill him, Asher. There's Conroy to consider."
He could have hit the old fool.
"Of course I can. I have to. And if Geralt's still in there, I'll be doing him a favour. Now get these idiot folk out of here, would you? I've seen enough dead bodies to last me a lifetime."
He turned his back on the protesting cleric, trounced down the chapel steps and picked his way across the square until he was directly under Morg's undulating body. Ignoring the danger, he closed his eyes and for the first time called willingly to the power within. The flames leaped, burning away the last of Morg's taint. Crimson, gold, silver, azure. The colours of his peculiar magic poured through his veins like a waterfall, and joining them, power of a different hue, earthy brown mixed with grassy green, pure Olkin magic from the circle. Suddenly he was connected to the natural world with a strength he'd never felt before, as though he were a mountain himself, forged of living rock. Dimly, through the rainbow haze, he heard shouts, cries of surprise and wonder. He stopped his ears to them, looked inwards only, gathering the strands of his multicoloured talent, preparing it for battle. Baal's fierce war spells seethed beneath his surface, straining to be set free. A woman's scream abruptly silenced. Wrenched from his trance, he opened his eyes and stared at the face of death itself.
"Asher!" cried Morg, hovering before him.
Geralt's beauty contorted, distorted, and spittled with hate.
"Not dead yet?"
He lashed out his mind, fingers blurring the air with sigils even as the words he needed tumbled from his tongue. Somewhere, softly, he felt the circle's shock and surprise. Spitefully laughing, Morg deflected the power, sent the red flame splashing left and right, igniting helpless Olkin who stood too close, like statues of stone. Except statues didn't burn. Sickened, he turned on the rest of them.
"Run, you idiot! Run!"
Gleeful, malevolent, Morg whirled above them.
"No, no, don't run! Change!"
He pointed his fingers and shouted a string of terrible words, syllables to clot the blood and crawl the skin. Power poured out of him, black and stinking. The fleeing Olkin it sullied fell screaming to the ground, and altered, became demons.
"Gervail's mercy!" cried Vera, watching. "Prophecy, protect us!"
Daphne watched, shaking and sickened, as vulnerable flesh boiled and bubbled, stretched and strained, grew fangs and talons and snouts and horns, became scaled, sprouted bristles, thickened, hardened, and lost all humanity. She gasped as the milling livestock mutated with the people, grew steely wings and claws like billhooks and teeth as long and sharp as daggers. Nothing living touched by Morg's foul magic was spared. Forced now to focus on Morg's creations instead of Morg himself, Asher tried to stop the terrible transformations. He hurled his own magic after Morg's, light at the dark. The sorcerer extinguished it and flicked him aside with contemptuous ease, catapulted him through the rancid air and crashed him to the puddled ground where he lay winded and feebly struggling.
"Asher!" said Matt.
Daphne clutched his sleeve.
"Don't! You can't help him! We can't fight that!"
"Then what good are we, Dath?"
he demanded.
"What are we here for?"
Vera turned on him.
"We've done our part, Matthias. We've kept the secret of the innocent mage and brought him to the place he was always meant to be. Daphne's right. We're not made to fight this evil. That's why he was born."
"It's not enough!" Matt shouted. "I can't just sit here and let him face that alone."
"He's not alone. The circle's with him."
"Aren't we the circle?"
"Not anymore," said Vera sharply. "Our part is played. To interfere now is to put all at risk."
Pellin Auric stared at the monstrous things lurching and clattering and flapping and growling into life all over the square.
"But I'm captain of the city. I shall be out there fighting."
"If you go out there, he'll try to protect you," Vera told him, "which will likely get him killed. So hold your tongue and stay out of sight. All of you! That's the best we can do for our Asher now!"
She was hurtful, but right. Daphne exchanged stricken glances with Auric, Gar, and Darren, then turned to Matt, anguished beside her, and touched his hand.
"He'll be all right, Matt. We have to believe it. We mustn't lose faith for his sake."
"I'm trying, Dath," he whispered. "Gervail knows I'm trying."
He looked so unlike himself, lost and frightened, it was easier to stare outside than at him. Dazed and unsteady, Asher was back on his feet. Consumed with vengeance, Morg sizzled the air above his dreadful creations.
"Kill him, children!" he shouted, pointing. "Kill them all!"
The bestial, grunting, roaring things that moments before had been people, livestock, turned on Asher, slavering, beat their wings, lashed their tails, crashed their tusks against their hides, and charged. Asher flung out both hands and called forth Baal's war beasts. The air around him shimmered and seethed as monsters worse than the demons attacking him burst into life from thin air, creatures torn from the heart of nightmare, towering, stinking, yowling for blood. Morg howled his fury as Asher's monsters attacked his creations. He called forth his own war beasts, equally dire, the world filled with the sound and stink of violent death. The living demons' black blood gouted, poured sulphurous to the upheaved ground. The magical war beasts burst into clouds of stinking acid. Daphne watched, barely breathing, as Asher fought to destroy the cruelties Morg sent against him. From a vast distance she heard Gar name them. Brill beasts, dog trolls, wereslags, ruin slicks, an endless litany of foulness and decay. Asher held his ground, but only just. And then shrill screaming wrenched her head around. Not all the demons were trying to kill Asher. Some were in pursuit of other prey. She saw something that once had been a horse, now with eyes of fire and bony spikes all over its scarlet-scaled body, leap through a ruined shop front, then back out again with a Doranan youth in tow, his arm clamped in its teeth. The beautiful blonde boy was crying, flailing at the creature with his inadequate watered-down magic. The demon released him, reared up high, red hooves waving, then pounded his body to pulp on the cobbles. More screaming, this time from the chapel as its doors burst open and four bull demons chased a horde of Ulken out of their refuge. Most were children. Holes staggered behind them, drenched in blood, but his wounds overcame him and he collapsed to the ground. Dead or unconscious, she had no way to tell. Asher saw the children, couldn't help them. And Matt burst shouting from their pitiful shelter, ran straight at the demons, waving his arms. At his heels, Pelin Auric, just as demented.
"Come back, Matthias!" Vera shouted after him. "Don't do it! Come back!"
Daphne leaped after them, felt the brush of Vera's fingers as the old woman tried to catch her arm and shook her off, heard a curse as Vera followed. She didn't look back, saw nothing but Asher. Asher! He'd seen Matt and Auric. They'd reached the first of the running children and were pushing them desperately left and right behind anything that might hide them from the monsters pursuing. The leading bull demon reached the slowest of the little ones and gored her. Asher killed it with a spear of fire. Matt and Auric kept on snatching children, throwing them to safety. And then Morg attacked, swooped from the sky like a falcon to the kill, his face a rictus of fury and hate. Asher flung a massive ball of warfire at him. The writhing flames engulfed the sorcerer, cartwheeling him backwards and sideways into the majestic carved front of Justice Hall. Shattered masonry plunged to the ground, stained glass splintered and smashed and fell. Stunned and burning, Morg plummeted to the unforgiving marble far below and lay there, unmoving. Slipping in mud, in bloodied water, hurdling rubble and bodies, Asher tried to reach Matt and Auric and the fleeing children, throwing warfire at the demons as he ran. One of Morg's monsters reared up behind him.
"Asher!"
cried Daphne, and he turned and killed it. He saw her, faltered, brandished his arms.
"Get back! Get back!"
Then his face changed. Someone shouted,
"Vera, look out!"
Daphne staggered round, saw Vera hobbling, her frail strength spent, saw Pellin Auric running back to her, a long spar of timber in his hands like a javelin, saw a giant bull with blood-stained horns thundering behind the old woman, gaining, gaining. Vera tripped, went sprawling. Auric lunged and thrust his makeshift weapon into the creature's gaping maw. It bellowed, gouting blood, and crashed to the ground, crushing Vera beneath it, and Pellin Auric too. Asher cried out and dropped to his knees, hands clawing at his heart, his head, oblivious to the battle raging round him.
"Vera!"
Daphne shouted and started running. Children forgotten, Matt ran too. They reached Vera and Auric together, flung themselves to the blood-slicked street and reached for her hand, a way to free her. No use. She was dead. Her eyes, half open, stared at the red, hazed sky. Spilled from her fingers a shard of crystal, cracked now, its beauty charred.
"Vera,"
Matt whispered.
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry."
A groan then, filled with pain and confusion. Grief-struck, Daphne looked over the lumpen carcass of the demon bull, and there was Auric, leg pinned and living. Matt pushed to his feet.
"Help me, Daphne. I'll lift this monster. You drag him free."
But they couldn't do it unaided. She looked back to the shelter for Gar, who should be helping.
"Daphne, watch out!"
Matt yelled and knocked her brutally sideways. She fell across a pile of rubble, feeling her skin tear and blood spill, crying out as her head struck something cruelly hard. Matt had leaped forward, waving his arms. He danced himself sideways, away from her, shouting like a madman.
"What? What?"
An enormous armored winged demon, snouted and bestial and no longer human, was lumbering towards them.
"Here! Here!"
her crazy friend shouted. Her compass, her anchor, her candle in the dark.
"Here, you evil bastard!"
"No, Matt! Run! Run!"
But her voice was reduced to a whisper, and all around her the world was fading fast. But not quite fast enough. Morg's giant dagger-clawed monster seized Matt in its massive arms and tore him limb from limb. Hot blood sprayed in a mighty fountain, splashing the cobblestones scarlet. On his knees and devastated by the sundering of the circle, Asher heard Matt's desperate cry. He looked up, through blinding pain saw the demon, saw Daphne in danger, saw Matt shove her to safety, confront the monster, and die in blood and futility. Time stopped, and the whole world with it. When it started again, he was back on his feet, raging, weeping, and lusting for death. War beast after war beast boiled into existence around him. He set them loose to rampage, and then leaped forth to join them.
Kill! Kill! Kill!
His first victim was the thing that slaughtered Matt, When it was over, and all Morg's monsters were slain or destroyed, there fell a silence, shot through with the sound of someone sobbing and someone else groaning. The square was drifted with sulphurous smoke, slicked underfoot with pools and puddles of blood, thick, black, and red, looking like a slaughterhouse with the sundered carcasses of demons and the broken bodies of children and their elders. Tired beyond imagining, Asher raised a hand as heavy as lead and banished his surviving war beasts to nothingness. Then he staggered to Dathne. Gar was with her, seemingly unhurt, helping her sit up. He didn't give a rat's arse about Gar.
"I'm all right, Asher," she insisted,
though there was blood on her face and her eyes were unfocused.
"Leave me. Finish this. Destroy Morg and end the nightmare."
It nearly killed him, but he left her, ignoring Gar, who shouted his name. Morg the sorcerer lay still as death on the steps of Justice Hall. Brimmed with pain, Asher walked to join his fallen enemy, looked down on him and considered his opulent clothing, burned in patches by the scorching warfire. Considered, too, the way the intact rubies across his chest winked and flashed with every indrawn breath. Reaching down, he rolled Morg over. Conroy Geralt's unmarked face was as handsome as ever. On his belt, neatly secured in its lavishly jeweled sheath and barely flame-touched, Conroy's knife. Asher slid it free and hefted it in his palm, admiring its weight and balance, admiring the Ulken craftsmanship. Odd that Conroy chose an Ulken-made dagger, given how he despised all things not Dorinan. Odd, and immensely gratifying. He felt the merest flicker of sorrow then. Conroy Geralt was a bastard, but it was unlikely he'd asked to be consumed by Morg. And now he was going to die. Had to die, so Lur might live. He shook himself.
"Don't think on that. Don't think on it. It's him, or you and everyone else. You're saving lives, remember?"
And not by spending his own, after all. When he wasn't so tired and full of pain, and this day's doings were a good ways behind him, he might crack a smile about that. But not now. He ripped apart Conroy's blackened clothing, bared Conroy's unburned chest to the air, blanked his mind, his imagination, and plunged the knife through muscle, between bones, deep into Morg's black, rancid heart, and twisted with all the might left in him to summon. Flesh quivered, blood flowed. The sorcerer exhaled once and died. Incapable of walking anywhere else, even back to Dathne, Asher let himself slump to Justice Hall steps. Dropping his forehead to his knees, he let the trembling take him. It was done then. Done and done. Prophecy appeased, outwitted even, since he still lived. The mad world righted. Now he could go home to Resthaven, start a new life with Dathne, his wife, his beloved. Eyes closed, shaking like a man with ague, he saw the sunrise over the harbour, smelled the salt air, felt the sea spray wet on his cheeks. A sob rose hot in his aching throat. Home. Beside him, Conroy Geralt's body coughed. No, no, that weren't bloody possible. On his feet again and staring, sucking air like a man half-drowned, he watched the knife push slowly but surely out of Conroy's blood-slicked chest to fall with a metallic thud on the marble steps, watched the wound seal closed as though it had never been, and the ribcage rise and fall, saw the eyelids flicker a dreadful warning. Shit! Shit! Morg was proof to killing steel, and now he had no choice. He'd have to use Gar's bloody spell. Seemed prophecy weren't outwitted after all. It wasn't fair. It wasn't fair. He wanted to go home. The words of the unmaking spell were in him, and waiting. He called them to the tip of his tongue, turned his head just a little, just far enough to see Daphne on her feet at the edge of the square, with Gar nowhere in sight. Daphne. Daphne. He nearly howled out loud. This wasn't bloody fair. At his feet, Morg sighed and shifted. Now or never. Time was up. With a right hand that trembled only a little, with a voice that cracked only just at the edges, he signed the sigils, spoke the spell, and closed his eyes.
Here I come there. Here I come.
Nothing happened. No surge of power, no flash of light, no death for him or Morg. Disbelieving, he opened his eyes.
Sink me bloody sideways, he shouted, spinning about. Gar! This way, Asher!
The little shit called out, beckoning from deep shadows off to the left.
Quickly! Here! Before he wakes!
Head spinning, rage like a red mist clouding his vision, Asher slipped and slithered down the steps to join Gar in the narrow walkway between Justice Hall and the city chapel, grabbed him by the shirt front and shook for all he was worth.
You said it were translated! You said it'd bloody work!
Gar fended him off with difficulty.
It is! It will! Let me go, Asher! Listen! To you?
He demanded.
I'm done listening to you! I listened to you and look what it got me! Sink me! Sink me! What do I do now? The bastard won't die! I stuck a knife in his heart and he still ain't dead! And your spell, your damned bloody spell!
Won't work unless it's channeled through me. He took a step backwards, staring.
What?
Gar's face was bloodless, his eyes hollowed and bruised. I changed Baal's incantation, Asher. Not a lot, just a little. Now I'm an integral part of the magic. The power must flow through me before it can kill Morg.
Was Gar raving? Deluded? Had the past week's strain unhinged him completely?
Reading the questions in his face, Gar sighed and shook his head. I'm in my right mind, I promise you, Asher. And what I've said is the simple truth. It's what I tried to tell you before you tried to dash out my brains.
You altered the incantation? Why?
I had my reasons. Stunned, almost speechless, Asher turned away, turned back again, still struggling.
But that means you'll die too, don't it?
Gar shrugged. What do you care, so long as Morg is dead?
You are mad,
he whispered, retreating until his shoulder blades met cold, damp bricks. Stark, staring, sun-touched. You know I'm not. Morg must die, and this is the only way.
It can't be, he shouted. You're the smart one, the scholar, the historian. Think of something else. I've already had one man die in my place, Gar. I ain't about to make it two.
Gar shook his head. That choice isn't yours. It's mine, and it's made.
But why?
Why does it matter? You don't care about me. No, he didn't, but that weren't the point.
Pretend I do and tell me why!
Gar let out a sigh and stared at the ground. I promised Fain I'd not seek her crown and broke my word. I promised you I'd keep you safe and broke my word again. I promised Baal I'd protect her people with my life, and that's one promise I intend to keep. I may be a magicless cripple, but I'm still Lur's king. I'll not have my legacy a string of broken promises. My father taught me better than that. I told you once, I have a destiny. Do you remember? Well, this is it. He looked up then, his face as stony as any effigy. Don't try to stop me, Asher. I'll hate you if you do.
And if you make me go through with this, I'll hate you!
A twisted smile touched Gar's lips. You hate me now.
Then I'll hate you more!
Another shrug, uncaring. Hate me as much as you want. It changes nothing. Asher, there's no other way, and we're running out of time. Trapped. He was trapped, with no escape. The bastard. The bastard!
I'll never forgive you for this, Gar, he whispered. Never, not ever.
I know that already, said Gar. Now shut up and listen. We only have moments. Everything I taught you in the wagon holds true. All that's different is the spell's delivery. You hold my shoulder, and you don't let go. Understand me? If you let go, the spell fails, and Morg lives forever. He was numb, dizzy.
Over my dead body.
No, said Gar, unsmiling. Over mine. He had no answer to that. Still unsmiling, Gar reached inside his jacket and pulled out the age-mottled journal that had started this mess. Bits and pieces of ragged paper were slid here and there between its pages. Looking at it, his expression softened to tenderness. I brought Baal's diary with me. It comforts me somehow, though I know that makes no sense to you. He held it, but his hand unsteady. Take it. Care for it. It's the last the world has of a grand and glorious woman who gave her life for something bigger and better than she was. Don't let her be forgotten. Please. Grudgingly, he took the proffered diary and shoved the bloody thing inside his waistcoat. Gar's unguarded face was too terrible to look at. Now what? He muttered. Now you put your hand on my shoulder, and we finish what Morg started. And you're sure this'll work? You said it yourself, you're a magicless cripple. What if... Gar's chin lifted, his face full of pride now and nothing uncomfortable. You said it better. I'm the scholar. Trust me, Asher. This will work. Side by side, they walked to the mouth of the passageway.
Begin the incantation,
Gar whispered. But keep us concealed till the very last word. Then we'll confront him. Don't forget, you must see his eyes. And for Baal's sake, Asher.
I know, I bloody know! Whatever I do, don't let go!
The words of the spell were still there, still waiting. He took a deep breath, let it out softly, tightened his fingers on Gar's steady shoulder.
Senusatarum!
Sketch the first sigil.
Belkav Tavartis.
Sketch the second and the third.
Cavartis, Thosartis, Domonartis Ed.
This time it was different. The magic ignited, dark and dreadful, setting his bones on fire. Left arm raised to shoulder level, fingers spread and pointing, Gar stepped smoothly out of the shadows, shaking, burning. Asher stepped with him. Morg stood posed at the top of Justice Hall's steps, clothing mended, immaculate and glittering. He saw them and laughed, burnished with power.
So there you are! And look at you! Look! The little cripple and his tame brute Olkin holding hands on the brink of death! How poetic! How romantic!
He lifted his arms and threw back his head. Baleful green fire crackled around him, igniting the sullen air.
Oh, what a wonderful way to die! You two first, then whoever is left. Or should I leave you till last?
Gar was shivering. Finish it, Asha! Quickly, now! Before he kills anyone else! Yes, yes, more than time to finish it. He could barely contain the maelstrom within. On a choking breath, he lifted his head to look deep into Morg's mad, shining eyes, opened his mouth and whispered, "Nux." Killing magic seared through his veins, out of his fingers clutched to Gar's shoulder, into Gar's body and down Gar's arm to burst from his fingertips in a stream of pure gold fire. It struck Morg hard in his knife-proof heart, transmuting him to a pillar of flame. Gar sagged to the ground, gasping, shuddering. Not loosening his grip, Asha followed him downwards as the spell of unmaking flowed like blood from a mortal wound. For 5 slow heartbeats, Morg burned incandescent. Then came a crack of ear-splitting sound. The golden fire bloomed, blossomed, swallowed the sun. Morg disappeared, and his dead demons with him. Without a word, Gar slumped to the cobbles, fell face upwards, green eyes staring at the cloudy sky. The sky with no wall. Asha fell with him. He mustn't let go, no matter what happened. Gradually, he became aware of feet hurrying by him, sound as rubble was kicked away. Voices shouted orders, called for help here, help. He wanted to answer, but his head was hurting, and he was, oh, so very tired. Footsteps stopped beside him. He opened his eyes. Daphne. At her shoulder, Darren. Not dead then, the old crow. Even with a groggy heart. And in his face, such a ravagement of grief. He managed to smile as Daphne knelt beside him, her hand pressing hard to his cold, wet cheek.
"You are going to tell me something,"
he whispered, his voice a sickly croak. Her eyes were brighter than any star.
"I was, love, wasn't I?"
Her forehead came to rest against his.
"We've made a baby,"
she told him softly.
A baby? A baby? How had that happened?
He turned his head and said to his friend,
"Did you hear that, Gar? I'm having a baby."
But Gar was dead and couldn't hear him. Darren sobbed then, a thin, broken sound. Asha sat up with Daphne's help and stared at the rotten old crow in fury.
"Don't you blame me, you bloody old man. This ain't my doing. It ain't my fault."
His blunt and brutal handprint was burned into the shoulder of Gar's blue coat.
"It ain't my fault,"
he said again.
"I never thought of it. I ain't the scholar. It were his idea. All his. Not mine."
He lowered his forehead to Gar's still chest.
"I forgive you, Gar,"
he whispered.
"I forgive you. Please. Now you forgive me too."
Silence, and then a long, slow weeping of rain. Epilogue. After the moist heat of the high summer afternoon, the shadowy coolness of House Torvig's royal crypt came as a welcome relief. Asha took a deep breath, tossed a ball of glimfire into the air, and let it light his way along the corridor to the place he'd not stepped foot in since the funeral. His palms were damp, and his heart was racing. Sink it. He'd sworn he wouldn't let nerves get to him. The chamber was cramped, crowded with memories as well as coffins.
As he pressed past Born, then Dana, and finally Fane, he touched a fingertip to his forehead in greeting, looked into the marble serenity of their faces, and with affection recalled them, living. Majesty, Majesty, Highness. They were the last royal family of Lur, the end of a long and proud tradition. One day they'd be nought but old-fashioned portraits staring down from a wall, engravings in a history book, with no one left alive who'd know them. One day, but not today. He reached the fourth and final coffin, shoved his hands in his pockets, and took another deep breath, then let it out slowly, hoping the ache in his chest would ease. It didn't. So, he said, into the somnolent silence, here I am. Bet you thought I'd never make it, eh? By some kind of miracle, he'd managed to get Gar's effigy pretty lifelike, even though Darren kept insisting the nose was wrong. Bloody old crow. Staring at Gar's proud stone profile, he felt a wave of melancholy, a grinding echo of grief. Daphne said he shouldn't come here. Let the dead lie and the living dance. That was her motto, but he'd put it off for long enough. So here he was. With a snap of his fingers, he conjured a stool to sit on. No reason he couldn't be comfortable, was there? Heart still heavily thudding, he tilted it onto two of its legs till he reached a precarious balance. We had some rain this morning. Rain that fell all on its lonesome, without any meddling from me. He shook his head. Rain without magic, like everyone's agreed to. Did you ever think we'd see the like? No more weather working. Now there's a thing. The city folk had danced in the street like children as the dove-grey clouds summoned by no one unburdened themselves without spite or fury. He and Daphne had smiled to see it. He smiled again now, remembering, then swiftly sobered. Harsher memories lurked close to the surface. Sometimes he thought they'd never sink. Everything's different now, Gar. Everything's changed. For the better, I'm hoping, though I don't deny it's still a mite unchancy. Bloody politics. There's lots of you Doranin of the mind things should go right back the way they were. Seems they're having a deal of trouble getting used to oaken magic. Good thing I got Hose on my side. Good thing Nyx and some healers from the Circle patched him up and kept him breathing. He's a royal Barlsman. Folk listen when he speaks. He's kept the kingdom together, I reckon, him and his clerics. Kept folk from going mad. He thudded the stool back to the flagstoned floor, got off it, arms folded over his chest, and started pacing. We lost a lot of people, Gar. Yours and mine. The storm savaged every inch of the kingdom, just like the Circle said. Pulling a face, he added, all of Conroy's family perished. Sad, but I don't deny it's made life easier. Ain't no squabbling over crowns anymore, and it seems I got no brothers left but one. There were waves, you see, from the falling of Dragon Teeth Reef. Ferocious they were, folks say. Taller than treetops and faster than a galloping horse. They washed in from the harbours, up and down the coast. Resthaven's most gone now, and West Wailing, Rilling Coombe, Struan's Cove. The playgrounds of his childhood, smashed to rubble and firewood. He'd not gone down to see them yet. Wasn't sure when or if he would. Getting the kingdom back on its feet was a full-time job. And besides, all those survivors searching for answers, what could he tell them? How could he explain? Not even the innocent mage could save everyone. He shook his head. Javael alone knows how Zeth survived, but if anyone was going to, it'd be him. I sent him a message saying he and the rest of the family could come here, that they was all welcome. Folks as spoke for me said he just spat and walked away. Aye, well, that's bloody Zeth for you. With a shrug and a jerk of his chin, he put that memory to bed. And Jed survived too, bless him. He's living here now, with us. Potters round the stables and pastures most days. Signet and Balladair follow him like overgrown dogs. He won't stop feeding them apples, no matter how often I ask him not to. Was that Glimshadow, or Gar secretly smiling? He smiled himself a little. Right or wrong, he found it hard to grieve for his brothers. But if he'd lost Jed, we're rebuilding slowly. Got a new council. Daphne's on it, and Pelinoric. Me. Holes, of course, and Nix. Lady Marna, too. She's a woman with sense. There's talk of making Auric mayor of Dorinna, but I don't know if he'll do it. He was born a guardsman, Pelin. Daphne's overseeing all to do with oaken magic. He grinned. You should hear her speechifying. Scares the trousers off me. Vera'd be right proud of her, if she was here. Matt, too. His breath caught a little at the sound of their names, and his fingers pressed the lump of crystal still buried in his flesh. It was a talisman now. A part of him. Memory. As they were part of him and always would be. Bloody Darren's in his element. Fussing and organizing and bossing folk about. Truth is, I'd be lost without him. But don't you bloody tell him. The old crow's puffed up enough as it is. He scratched his chin and watched, for a small while, Glim Shadows dance on the chamber wall. It ain't smooth sailing, not by a long shot, but we ain't quite capsized yet. He snorted. Some fools want to make me king, but I won't let 'em. I ain't a king. I'm a bloody fisherman. Just 'cause I got some powerful magic. Suddenly tired, he dropped back on the stool. I don't much care for magic, Gar. Don't like what the wrong person can do with it. Ain't too proud of what I did with it, even though I had to. I've kept Baal's diary, like you asked me. Read it, at least what you managed to translate. Your bloody handwriting, I nearly went cross-eyed. I'll keep it safe. No need to worry. But I reckon I'll keep it secret, too. Baal hid the thing for a reason, and I reckon she was right. No one should have that kind of power, not for any reason. He'd told not even Daphne he had the diary. He had a duty to safeguard the future, just in case another Morgan, or Baal, was born. Gar's effigy glowed warmly in the light of the yellow glimfire. In the stone face, a silent agreement. Seeing it, he breathed a little easier. There's talk started up of crossing Baal's mountains, and I reckon we will go. One day. But there's work to do here first. That's what we need to think on now, not rushing about from here to there sightseeing. He stood again then, and unkinked his back. Speaking of work, I'd better go. Just wanted to tell you what's happening is all. Figured you'd like to know. His fingers touched Gar's shoulder, briefly. I miss you, my friend. Ain't a day goes by, I don't think. He stopped, his throat closing. It was done. It was done. And nought could undo it. Anyways, I just wanted you to know this. I promise I won't waste what you gave me. What you gave all of us. I should have said thank you, Gar. I should have said a lot of things. Sorry. Guess I am bloody rude after all. He heaved a sharp sigh. Don't know when I'll have a chance to visit again. But I will. I promise. Wait for me, eh? With a flick of his fingers, he sent the glimfire bobbing towards the crypt's doorway. As he reached Fane's tomb, he stopped, shook his head, turned back. "Nearly forgot," he said, "about the baby. If it's a boy, we thought we'd call it Rifle. That's a bit more personal than a mouldy old statue. If it's a girl, Darren says we got to call it Gardenia." He grinned. "Darren can suck on a blowfish and die." And he left the crypt, still grinning. The recently opened Garden of Remembrance was full of fountains and flowers and flitting jewel-coloured birds. Asher came out of the crypt into warm sunshine, where families strolled and boys and girls, black-haired and yellow, threw balls of glimfire, squealing with laughter. Daphne was waiting for him, round as a full moon. "All right?" she asked, her hand on his arm. He kissed her cheek.
"Aye, all right."
"Good," she said, and tugged him along the path. "Now walk with me." As he turned, obedience personified, he caught a glimpse of Darren hurrying towards them from the direction of the palace. The light of battle was in the old crow's eye, and a dozen scrolls were clutched to his chest. He groaned. He never should have mentioned he was going to the crypt. "What?" said Daphne, alarmed. "Nout, nout," he assured her blithely, slid his arm around her shoulders, and matched his stride to hers as they strolled between the budding pink cantamonies. With luck, she wouldn't notice. But Daphne glanced to her right and cursed. "Oh, for Javale's sake! Can't he leave us alone for 5 minutes?" "Doubt it," he said. "Darren lives for his paperwork. You know that." She gave him a look. "Since when are you so tolerant?" "I ain't. But you're the one said bygones were bygones and these are brand new days, and you said I had standards to set. Can't hardly show my aggravation in public, can I?"
"Maybe not," said Daphne, and raised her hand. "But I can."
The scrolls of paper leaped out of Darren's sheltering arms. They heard his wail of dismay quite clearly.
"That weren't very nice," he said.
Glancing over his shoulder, he saw Darren stooping and scooping the scrolls from the ground, and grinned.
"Then again, neither's this. Rat's arse to good examples."
With a whispered word, he set the scattered scrolls to dancing. The children, seeing a better game afoot, abandoned their balls of glimfire and joined in the chase. They thought it enormously funny. Darren didn't.
"Asher!" he shouted, his voice carrying on the lively breeze. "You reprobate! You ruffian! You sorry excuse for a king!"
Asher shook his head in sorrow.
"What a mouth the old man's got! And all in front of the baby, too!"
"Disgraceful!"
Daphne agreed, smiling, took his hand and placed it tenderly on her burgeoning belly. With Darren disposed of, they wandered amongst the flower beds and past the statues in the Bower of Heroes. Gar, and Matt, and Vera, and Rafel. The sun shone softly in an eggshell blue sky. Birdsong drifted from the trees around him, and a lone skirling eagle rode the thermal currents above the top of the Black Woods, up the face of Baal's Mountains, and beyond. This concludes The Awakened Mage. Please visit our website, www.tantor.com, for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers. Or call toll-free 877-7-TANTOR to request a catalogue.